welcome into the final episode of We the Pod, the podcast about We the Fans. Bill Barnwell, Tom Waddle, and Sarah Spain.
I would suggest that we try to finish this a little better than the Bears 2016 season, okay?
I had actually forgotten about the Titans game where nobody could catch a ball. Yes. I mean, if you had reminded me of it, I would have remembered that happening. But watching it again, it was like... It was a comedy of errors.
It was, to me, what's probably the one thing about this season that stood out the most to me. I mean, as a receiver, I see things through the lens of guys getting open and catching the ball. Mm-hmm. Or somewhat getting open and dropping the ball. And as I said in one of the episodes, I personally, and it was not me being overly dramatic, I've never seen at any level that level of ineptitude from a group. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I just could not believe what I was watching. And it kind of, for me, summarized what was the 2016 season.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, please don't take this personally, guys. I was not watching Bears-Titans live on Sunday.
What?
I had other stuff to watch.
You didn't know in advance that you would be doing a podcast about a reality show about the Bears and their fans?
I wish I had known. I would have prepared in so many ways. But I was watching it. I was watching Red Zone on one of the TVs I have. And so I was just like... out of the corner of my eye, I'd see the Bears dropping passes, and I'd be like, why do they keep showing this replay over and over again? And it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was all drops. It was incredible.
And poor Matt Barkley. I mean, he really played a good game.
Yeah.
When you have, like, those moments that are very small auditions, and that's all you're going to get, and you play as well as he did, and then, I mean, they had that game multiple times.
It was crazy. It was crazy what I was watching, but again, it was symbolic of what 2016 was from my fan perspective for this team.
So we saw that. We also saw the 49ers game, which was a rare victory, and saw the first down lady really getting to work out in. I love Tracy.
Yes,
what an
she's
interesting
so great.
Person.
Yeah.
And you know what's great about her is that there's the stuff that you can easily sort of stereotype.
She can build.
Right, that's awesome.
Cool.
That's awesome. But I was going to say that there's the stuff that you could stereotype, which just seems cool, like this badass lady who's drywalling and hauling around toolboxes and just getting done. But then also that what her husband said about her was that this quality that she has, that she makes everyone around her feel like they really mean something to her, which is totally the opposite of toolbox lady, right?
Yes.
So it's this very like dynamic person who it seems like everybody just is like joyful around her.
Yeah, I mean, she was someone who I think... within 2 minutes of her hanging out on the screen, I'm like, I want to hang out with this person.
Yes.
It'd be great.
Yeah.
She's very fortunate that it's especially where her seats are in section 250 and the run that she has from where she is to the bottom of the aisle. She's very fortunate that the offensive ineptitude was historically, you know, on display for this team. Otherwise, I mean, if this was a year where they actually did create some first downs, I fear for that woman's health.
I don't know, man. That might be the only way to be a regular Bears goer and not be overweight, right? If you if you get in a good stair workout every first down, in addition to eating, you know, a foot long hot dog and whatever else you can
drinking
find.
Six beers.
Yeah, exactly. That was the other thing, and this might show a real lack of awareness or like outside awareness, but. I have never really been at a game that was freezing cold that I elected to go to, bought a ticket for, and sat and was miserable at. I've thought about how it would stink to be a vendor because it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought about when a team stinks at the end and no one's showing up. When you saw the vendor, you know, Terry, look out and be like, where are all my people at? And, like, you got no one to sell to. It's cold. No one wants to drink cold beer anyway. Like, that's a tough gig.
Yeah. It's really brutal.
Yeah, it was. And I think that scene was actually, as pregame was starting, but it was kind of, you know, it was kind of foreshadowing of what he was going to face. I thought that what we saw from him and his character, and he went back to where he grew up, I thought that was very, you know, there was a human element to it that I appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And his willingness to acknowledge his transgressions and the adversity that he had faced and being able to face that adversity and find a way to point himself in the right direction. And you could get the sense, not to get too hokey, but he drew from some of the support that came from being a part of that group. And I thought from a human interest standpoint, that was one that left me feeling good about, you know, the majority of that episode.
yeah, it felt like a real character. You know, some of the characters in the show have been a little one-sided, or you've seen certain elements of them that don't really represent their entire sort of entity as a whole, from the best we can tell. And it felt like Terry, you know, was not sugarcoating things. He was not trying to misrepresent himself. He was giving a genuine history of you know, why he fit into Chicago, what he missed, what he didn't miss, where he went wrong, and where he is now, where he's pretty happy. And I thought that was really cool. It felt like I was meeting a genuine person who I would not have access to otherwise.
Yeah, and on the same plane, when one of the women lost her job, and then the first thing, you know, kind of that we see is her friend, who has been kind of her bear, you know, superhero partner, is there to help her through the process. So I thought that it was nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting when you do a show like this, because you're going to prepare for some stuff, right?
Yeah.
You're going to manufacture a thing where they all meet at the Bacon Festival.
Yes.
And, you know, you're going to have a crossover. I was surprised when Mike and his dad went to the game and they got into a car that we didn't see that the Uber driver was our guy Keith Kindler.
Yes, right.
Didn't you think that was going to be him?
100%.
And it even looked like the same car, so I feel like maybe it was. Maybe they didn't say anything interesting enough to cut it into the show. Maybe we spent that time watching Siobhan and Mike make pizza, which I liked.
How did you feel about that, Sarah?
I think it was probably more like their everyday life. I think when you take away the drama of the wedding, which turns people crazy and stressed, and the Cubs win, which took over everybody's lives. I mean, my husband and I planned a honeymoon to New Zealand and Australia in 2 days because we had our flights and that was it. And then the Cubs started winning. We went to every single World Series game. We drove to Cleveland and back twice. And then we came back. I was in the parade. The next day we were like, oh, no. We leave in 2 days, and we have no hotels and no restaurants and no anything booked. It took over everyone's lives. This was a once-in-a-century thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think this was them being married and being cute, and the pizza looked delicious, and I like that we saw a little bit of that. I don't know if maybe part of the reason they felt like that was necessary to put into a show that has only so many episodes is that it felt like all we had seen from them was this butting of heads and then some of the Cubs stuff.
And you acknowledging it, like, very...
It's a reality
openly.
Show.
Yo, yeah. I'm with you.
You got to talk about the drama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to pull out your real, true feelings in this
I'm
podcast.
Saying that I liked Mike and Siobhan in that moment. I thought that they seemed cute together, and I liked their interactions. And it was probably a good thing that we saw that, because that probably is more like them. I mean, not that the other stuff isn't like them. It's like when people go on reality shows and, like, it was the editing. And you're like, you called someone a C word. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, that's not editing.
No, and listen, I think in all seriousness, as we've all, listen, if you've gone through a wedding in the process and all, as you mentioned, and all of the details and the stress that goes into it, I don't know that you get a chance to really focus on who those people are truly. So I agree with you. I think what you saw was them relaxed in a more kind of genuine environment than, wow, we have a reality show that is following us, and oh, by the way, I'm also trying to plan a wedding at the same time.
Well, and you heard him say that. We're so excited for the honeymoons because no cameras.
Right.
Yes.
Like, you can tell they're just sick of it.
Yeah, it got to a real point. Now, let me ask you guys, have you, in your marriages, in your relationships, have you ever asked or been asked, do you love me more than pizza? Is that a conversation you guys have?
No, we have conversations about how we love our dogs more than each other.
Mm.
I think at this point, my wife probably loves the sport of tennis more than she loves me, with just one child left in the house. And
yeah,
she's trying to actually, I think, in some way, pursue the, you know, the advanced tennis
circuit,
yeah,
yes,
whatever it is, the Masters of the,
yes,
the elderly women, but
elderly, I hope she's,
yeah,
listening.
Well, she's 51, so she's older than me, but
and you'll never let her forget,
yeah,
it.
Bye.
But yeah, I think that at this point, after 25 plus years, we've, yeah, never said it, but she may be thinking it.
I will say that I love food, and I get really excited about restaurants we go to. I'll look at the menu. I'll look at Yelp and see what people are recommending. My husband does not care. He'll eat,
really,
anything. He'll go anywhere. And so he'll literally joke about how the way that I approach a menu and an exciting dinner out is the way most people, like, engage in porn. like the enthusiasm,
how do you know
that
how
I express.
Most people engage.
He's
engaging.
Guessing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you opening these menus in incognito mode in your browser?
No, just openly. Because I work from home, so I don't have to mess around with the,
wow,
incognito browser.
Mm. I don't get all fired up for meals like that either, but, you know, I'm a passenger. I'm more of a passenger,
yes,
like your husband is when it comes to going out to eat.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But I did like that line of, do you like me more than pizza? And he said, I think yes is the answer.
You know what? Also, in not to, again, sound too sappy about it, but I thought that Mike and the picture of his grandfather was something
great.
That I've identified with over the last several months, because while I'm a Reds fan, and we can have a pity party about that later.
Sorry about
yes,
that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I witnessed a lot of tears and a lot of emotion from Cub fans who went through what was arguably their greatest sports moment, and mm-hmm. being able to share it with those that are still with us, and in some indirect way, with those who aren't still with us. I don't know how many people that aren't in Chicago now can actually identify that with that, but me watching it kind of took me back several months to mm-hmm. seeing that on full display for weeks and weeks, if not months. It was pretty cool.
What was that like for you, Bill? Because I know for me, being a Cubs fan, and like mm-hmm. like Tom, I wrote stories about people like that, and I was around all these great stories during the Cubs run. So I cried, of course, when he's mm-hmm. crying about his grandpa Fair. And calling his dad. I even liked that Siobhan and Mike were hugging, and that she felt like she wanted to be a part of this like moment that was so special to him. Yeah. What was it like not being a Cubs fan or from here, Bill?
It reminded me of being a Red Sox fan in 04 when they
yeah.
won. You know, it was the same sort of thing. My family are not Red Sox fans, but I have plenty of, I was living in Boston, I had a ton of friends who their families were Red Sox fans, and I'd been Red Sox fans for, you know, generations, and people had died. So it definitely echoed that for me. And, you know, it felt very genuine. It felt like, you know, the people I know who are Cubs fans experienced that, got to go through that. And even if you're not a Cubs fan, I think it's cool to see, you know, sort of all the pain of supporting a team for so long and having them not win and have that finally come through. I think even if you're not a Cubs fan, even if you're a fan of a team that hasn't won, you know, in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, I think the idea of that happening one day for you is pretty exciting.
Did you see anything that surprised you in these last two episodes, either of you?
Well, I was surprised that they had teased the scissor, the purple dragon,
yes.
yeah. early, and we were so excited for the payoff of that. And then they skipped it. There was just one little, you got a cough. And the only reason there was any reason to like look beyond that was because we'd seen the tease of the scissor.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, I know these are being edited as they're airing, right? This is not a show that was, you know, in the can and then sent out. So mm-hmm. is there any chance that when that first episode aired with the scissor, somebody's job or family or someone got on the horn and was like, you know, that's illegal, right? Like, and then they called it and they're like, hey, could you maybe that thing you teased, let's not put that in the show.
Yeah, I think that's plausible. I liked, I don't know if it surprised me as much, but I enjoyed it. I liked Keith and the RV.
Yeah.
Y'all loved it.
Yeah. I didn't realize that, it's legal for a driver to drive an RV where everyone in the back is getting tanked. Like on the
car
road.
Bar, man.
I didn't know that
never
was actually legal either. Is it?
It probably isn't.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Just assuming it was?
I mean, back in the day when I was making bad decisions, we would car bar it in a regular car, which I know is illegal.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if a motorhome... Actually, I would imagine...
I don't know why.
Well, because, you know,
why
you could drink on a bus, like a party bus.
Yeah.
So I would imagine a motorhome might be similar.
But, it, like, our party bus is closed off? I guess the driver, like, separated
no.
by
no.
something?
Uh-uh.
Really?
What if you just have a big car? I mean, is that qualified as being able to do that?
It's an SUV, so
yeah,
we
if
can
you
do
got
it.
A Suburban, yeah. you can get messed
yeah.
up, no problem.
It's a beer truck. We won't crash it.
But yeah, I like the RV. I also like that he was wearing a Kyle Long jersey. I feel like if you wear an offensive lineman jersey, I am yeah. in on you as a person.
Well, there has been that discussion here, Bill, over the last several months, you know, if not years, whose jersey would you buy
yeah.
as a Bears fan? So, I mean, you'd be shocked at the number of
it's
Kyle
gotta
Long
be Walter Payton.
Jerseys are
I mean,
out
at
there.
This point,
yeah,
I'm going with
absolutely.
Someone that can't be traded. And
yeah. His number's pretty much there. Can't,
yeah.
can't change his number.
According
yeah,
to the website I just randomly pulled up that is, you know, in no way the final word on this, no one can seem to find any laws allowing or disallowing alcohol to be consumed in the back of an RV in transit.
Great. It's a lawless way. We've yeah. had a loophole.
Although RVTravel.com says you may be breaking the law because of open container laws.
Mm. I thought I saw a couple of passengers
depends
in the Uber
the
vehicle as well that weren't wearing their seatbelt. As we go along and we try to point out illegal things
yes.
from the show, I just want to make that...
Okay, so in Illinois, apparently there's a lot of... there's a lot of things that must, you have to have a cooking facility with an onboard fuel source, a gas or electric refrigerator, a toilet with exterior evacuation, heating or air conditioning system, portable water supply, blah, blah, blah. All these things must have at least four of the following in order for there to be open container on board.
The good thing is I have most of that in my Kia already, so I can get
yeah. Well, and also that motorhome seemed up to code. So I'm sure they've got all the required.
The most obvious, the most obvious presentation was the role of duck. The role
yes,
of duck.
Yes. Yes.
They also they're in the microwave drawer. Yeah, they're an LLC, so you got to figure
they're not.
They're not worried about getting in trouble.
Six guys, LLC. Six guys, LLC.
Something like that. So after our last podcast, one of our listeners, Shy Honey Bear, who goes to the tailgate that I mentioned, that is the crazy old 70s school bus, the Bears bus, she was weighing in on our guesses as to who might appear on the show as the next Chicago person who gets their own vignette.
Yeah.
She had some great guesses. Mancow, Rahm Emanuel, Jeff Garlin, any of the Bill Swirsky super fans, which would have been great, one of the George Wentz or whatever. None of us had our money on Cheryl Scott.
No.
Is she a known person in Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the ABC.
Part of the Disney ESPN company.
Sorry, I didn't mean to insult a fellow Disney employee. I apologize.
But I mean, yeah, I think that's all encompassing the news and the weather and the sports. They all are leading the way here in Chicago. I say that as a teammate, but also as a observer. I thought she did a great job. I mean, it looked like it was very well produced.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I wasn't expecting it.
It was weird. Her delivery was great. The production was great. Like, the way they had her walk and the changing kind of dynamics of whatever the weather was, I thought that was cool if I'd been watching something about weather.
Right.
I like the idea of bringing in the weather with the team because it is a huge part of football, and that's what's interesting. And then it sets up that scene where they're freezing. It just felt like a different show.
Yeah. It did. I was honestly shocked that footage exists of that Bears 49ers game. I just thought it had happened. Like, it was just they simmed it on Madden and that was it.
Yeah.
Listen, it was a win. So
yeah,
I mean,
we needed it.
Yeah. I mean, whether it was ugly or not, we needed that.
Let me set the record straight. It was ugly.
It was.
Yes, yes.
There was no doubt about that. I was reminded as well that we went from a Tuesday when it was 70 degrees to a Thursday when it was 18 degrees.
That's awful. That was necessary, too, for people to really understand what the fans are dealing with. The thing is, there were elements of that Cheryl Scott thing that I did like, and they kind of like pointed out the weather changes and what the fans go through, what Terry has to go through as the beer vendor, which you don't really think about. And her delivery was good. It just, again, it was... The vignettes, I think, have been sort of hit or miss, where, like, they bring... Like they bring an ability to like break the fourth wall and get through information that you want to get through that can't be told through the characters.
Anything that you felt was missing specifically
that
you wanted to see?
You're trying to get to something.
Yeah. No. I'm seeing if how you watched it and the impressions you got were comparable to some of the things that I was getting from.
Let me say the thing that I was hoping we get more resolution on was the conversation between Danielle and Leslie where they were talking about the reality show and how Terrence does not get portrayed in a very favorable manner. And basically they talked about it for 30 seconds and then kind of just went away. Like there was no hint of like, we're going to change this or I'm sorry. Or she was kind Danielle's just like, well, it's kind of just they pick up whatever they want. So it just seemed like she has more engagement and more of a say in what happens than she was suggesting.
I felt like there were a lot of stories that because it wasn't an extensive run that you could only learn so much about so many people or that you couldn't tie up all the loose ends. I thought there were a lot of different avenues that were intriguing and they were entertaining, but you almost felt like you didn't get enough of certain characters or like, you know,
well, we've got
no
one
conclusion.
More next week. And then after next week's final episode will be the reunion episode, which I'm hosting, where I'll have all the cast characters back together. And I, of course, will ask you guys and anybody listening for questions that you might want to ask them. And I think
you'll be asking for the scissorp to be there.
The scissorp. I want us all to be sipping on scissorp in clear glasses. So
I'm
going to
pass.
See the purple drink.
I will donate mine to you.
But what questions that they might still have after the final episode. And I agree, sort of, I'm certainly interested in talking to Danielle about, if you're on one reality show where the goal is to be as salacious as possible and to try to build up any tiff that you have with your boyfriend as like World War III and you're slapping him and you're fighting about stuff. And then the other show, you seem super normal.
Yeah.
are you worried at all that the second show you agreed to is going to make people be like, oh, wait, so is the other one totally full of BS?
Mm-hmm. That's a very fair question. And I wonder, I guess, how many reality shows can you be on at one time and represent different versions of yourself? Like, I'd want to be on four or five if I'm going to be on one.
You could give out different parts of your personality.
Yeah, exactly.
Venues. Like anyone you meet, you could only suggest the show that you think they would.
Like I speak French, you know, in certain places at certain times I speak French and only French.
Yeah.
I could use that character.
I sincerely doubt that.
You are correct. Yeah, it's more like pig Latin. I did take French, but a long, long time ago.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shocking that you haven't kept it up.
Well, why would I? I played football.
I don't know.
I don't do French sports radio.
We should have taken Spanish. That's our real flaw.
Okay,
we would have used that.
Yes, I don't deny that.
Yeah,
but I don't have any use for speaking French fluently in my current occupation or my previous occupations.
It's true.
So.
What do we think overall? I know we still have one episode left, and we're not going to get to chat about that ourselves on the pod, but the overall arc of it, I thought, for me, part of my favorite part of the show was just the city. I think absolutely gorgeous, like, cinematography and the shots that they took, the views that they got, the way they set up different scenes by virtue of showing different parts of the city. How do we feel about how they pictured and captured Bears fans and what it is to be a Bears fan in general?
I mean, yeah, I thought it was pretty reasonable. You know, it gave me some perspective, and I'm always thinking about it from a, you know, from a management perspective or from a, for an X's and O's perspective, or thinking about it from the perspective of pretty much everything but the fans who were there on a week-to-week basis watching the game. So it was pretty cool to have that as a reminder, you know, just to keep that in perspective when I'm doing my job. And then I just thought it was a, you know, we had a lot of cool characters, but I wish I had seen more of, like, Tracy, for example. I would have loved to see more Tracy during the earlier weeks of the show. And I think Tom's point was probably pretty fair in that because it was a shorter run, you know, they had a bunch of different characters, and we didn't really get to know all of them as well as maybe I would have hoped. So I think that's going to be fleshed out a little bit with the articles that were written and the other stuff on the website. But, yeah, I thought we got to see some pretty interesting people. I just wish that maybe we'd focus on more of them, you know, narrowed it down a bit and focus on a couple of them more closely, or maybe just had a longer show.
You know, when I first heard of the project, and my first expectation was it was going to be another super fan thing, where, you know, you were going to be seeing characters or people who were playing roles of, and you quickly found out that that wasn't the case. It wasn't necessarily diehards that you would think that are all, you know, stumbling drunk and getting in fights with the opposing team's fans. Mm-hmm. I kind of was...
It's harder to be that and only miss three games since 1994, right? You almost have to be someone who treats it like a really a great, amazing part of your life, but not that you're going to get canned every time.
Yeah. And I was okay with the fact that these people seem to have an intense love for this team and being part of this situation, but not to the point where it affected the other aspects of their life.
It wasn't a caricature.
Right. They weren't caricatures. They were normal human beings that were coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds, different probably religious backgrounds. It was a melting pot, which was cool to see. And I really was struck by the fact that I think they nailed it with the narration coming from the beer vendor.
For sure. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was,
tied
it all together. So,
and hearing his story is huge. And I also was thinking about during this episode that, you know, they slogged through the worst season in Bears history.
Yeah, 3-13. Never happened
before. Absolutely brutal. And there's no necessarily signs that things are going to change soon for this team with Mike Glennon at the helm. And a lot of people still unsure about whether John Fox is taking a sort of golden parachute job or whether he actually...
You're not believing what David Kaplan is selling here at ESPN 1000, are you?
I'm trying to weigh
options. That's a podcast for another time.
Yes. but, I mean, whether or not John Fox has done great things in the past, that doesn't mean that necessarily he's going to turn around this team. And when... You said it yourself, when he arrived, he just didn't quite understand that he was arriving to such a messed up situation.
Dumpster fire.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of necessarily hope going forward, but I was thinking how cool it will be for them going forward to go to the games.
Yes.
People will recognize him. People will probably stop by Section 250 and want to meet Terry and buy a beer from him instead of somebody else.
Yeah.
People will come by. I loved when Mike and his dad went and Mike's dad saw old friends from the section he hadn't seen in years. Like, those are the kind of stories. Those are the things that I think people who don't really like sports that much think it's just, oh, you're just watching people hit each other. Mm-hmm. There's so much more humanity to it, and it brings people so much joy, and there's so much family and friendship around it that I think these people will feel connected forever. And it will be, you know, especially people like Siobhan, who maybe didn't get a good response from people who are kind of idiot meatballs who are like, you don't like sports, you suck.
Yeah.
You know, like in our everyday life, all three of us have plenty of friends who could not give a lick about sports, and we love them, and we think they're amazing.
Sure.
We don't have a reality show where we need to criticize them. I mean, that's why we're criticizing Mike and Siobhan. We're trying to nitpick about how do they get along when he loves this and she does it. This is an interesting dynamic while they're planning their wedding. But now that that's going to be done and it's just everyday life, I think even Siobhan will probably have fun. People will probably be giving her just a funny, gentle ribbing when she goes to a game and say, oh, you came, and she'll be like, oh, I'm having fun. You know, I think it'll be cool for all of them.
I agree.
Yeah. The one thing, one person I realized about when you just said that, who is gonna really suffer from this, is the beer vendor in section 249.
Yeah. And 251, you're screwed.
You guys are in serious trouble.
Terry's gonna start bouncing between the, you know, multiple sections with his newfound fame. He'll be wearing a We the Fans hat, just in case people aren't sure if it's him.
He's wearing a hat saying, it's me, Terry.
Yeah. Exactly. Maybe he'll start selling scissorp out of the bottom row of his
beer. No, we're not gonna do that. No.
Hey, man, make some money.
Stop it.
Knowing Terry's past, perhaps not the way I should have gone. My bad.
Yeah, instead of just opening the door and walking in, you always kick it in.
I do. Yeah. I do. Yeah. Well, we thank all you guys for listening. We're looking forward to the final episode, and then you can catch the reunion show that I will be Andy Coning the crap out of.
Yes.
I'm hoping for some thrown tables, some hair pulling.
That's how you roll.
If we don't get a proposal in the last episode, you know I'm going to be the one that makes it awkward.
You better.
at that reunion show. Is the ring in your pocket right now? What's going to happen here? For Bill Barnwell and Tom Waddle, I'm Sarah Spain. This is We the Pod. Thanks for listening.